Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
When you were a kid, did you want to be an astronaut?
Probably, yes. I loved space. I was hugely influenced by the Apollo program. What it taught me was I grew up in Montana. So for a young girl growing up in Montana to dream, and spaceflight and exploration are just boundless. And I took that as a call to exploration.
That's how we started a conversation a little earlier this afternoon with Dava Newman. She's former professor of aeronautics and astronautics at MIT, a job she took a leave from earlier this year when Newman became deputy administrator at NASA.
Newman is back in town today for the International Space Station Research and Development Conference that's being held in Boston. She came to our studios to talk about Mars, space exploration, and the challenges she sees as the second in command at NASA.
Dr. Dava Newman, welcome to Radio Boston.
Magna, it's so nice to be here. I was telling you, this is my radio station. I'm so glad to be in Boston with you and on WBUR.
Well, we are delighted to have you. To the best of your knowledge, when could we really launch a Mars mission?
So we're working on it. So kind of two aspects of our journey to Mars for a human mission, where International Space Station is, let's say, kind of the first step. Learning for long-duration flight, living in space. Then the next step we call the proving ground. We'll go to cislunar space, further out, longer duration. We have technologies that we have to develop and prove. And then the third phase is actually getting to Mars. So, but we're well on that journey, which is so exciting. And I'd like to point out, too, we're already on Mars. We have orbiters on Mars, and we have rovers on the surface. So all of our robotic precursor missions, we're learning a lot. Right. Every data, we get data back from Mars.
Right. But on the other hand, having a human being actually step foot on Mars is orders of magnitude different, right? Way more complicated, way more expensive.
Absolutely. Much more challenging. Yeah. We're in it for the challenging. You know, it's great to have a horizon goal out there. Inspirational.
Could we launch an actual manned Mars mission, say, in 10 years? Is that too ambitious? 15?
To launch it, the actual human mission to Mars is slated for the 2030s. So okay. It's a couple decades up. But we have that much work to get there to stay on that schedule, yeah. Absolutely. Like I said, we're going to go to the middle proving ground. Right now, we're Earth-reliant. You have a space station, you know, communications and food and supplies. At Mars, we're really completely Earth-independent. See, you have to, you know, all of your systems, your people, your systems have to be independent of Earth. We have a huge time delay. So that's kind of how we have it in those three phases.
Yeah. I mean, I want to talk more about the science and the scientific Great. Challenges in just a second. But now that you are the number two person at NASA, you know, politics kind of intrudes. What's your response to people who say, too ambitious, cost too much, it's not where NASA should be focusing its efforts?
I politely disagree. It's exactly where NASA and our government, and I think all of us as just private citizens, the investment is very small. I think it's worth it. We do have to be very judicious for the budget that we have. But again, we're making the technology developments. We can live with the budget that we have, so we have to be very judicious in the investments. And it is one step at a time, and it really is an investment for NASA, but also, again, like I say, for humanity, for inspiration.
So tell me more about that. I mean, why does Mars matter in your mind, in your heart?
We will be interplanetary species. I definitely believe that. And we're going scientifically to look for past evidence of life on Mars. So, yes, it's a stretch goal, but it's the right goal for NASA as the horizon goal. Again, we're there with rovers, we send people, and bring in the whole world. It's really a global. I look at it as a global exploration journey.
Yeah. Sorry, I was just looking at your wrist because you're wearing one of the new Apple Watches.
I am.
And I saw that the home image on that is planet Earth.
It's Earth, and I have the moon.
It's from the Earth as seen from space.
And you can fly. I never get lost. I'm always on Earth somewhere.
That's a view that I imagine you want more people to have firsthand.
That's exactly it. The people to have the view, and we want to take all the kids and public with us.
Yeah. Can we talk for a minute about the research that you were doing at MIT? I mean, because you were really developing exciting new technologies for something which is absolutely essential for human space travel, and that is the spacesuit, right? So, I mean, what was the biggest challenge or what is the biggest problem with the current spacesuits that astronauts use right now?
I call it actually the world's smallest spacecraft. And the reason I call it that is it's a human inside the suit, but you have to be provided every single system to keep you alive.
I mean, it's the only thing that's protecting an astronaut from the vacuum and vastness of space.
Exactly.
Those few layers.
That's it. You need a spacesuit to keep alive in the vacuum of space. And challenges that I've kind of concentrated on are how do we make them really mobile? Again, my vision is making you an Olympic athlete, empowering you. I want you to be an explorer on the surface of Mars with absolute mobility. I don't want the suit to encumber you.
Yeah. You know, I back in high school, I went to Space Camp, Space Academy. It was actually a really, really fantastic experience back when I did want to be an astronaut. And I got a chance to actually wear one of the suits, an old suit, of course, that they had decommissioned, you know, the Michelin Man ones that we're all familiar with. And it was a fantastic experience, but I got sort of a firsthand feeling about how hard it is to actually move in them. I mean, I was in a giant water tank, so simulated low gravity environment. But you really have to work hard to move your fingers and your arms, and you know, even grab like something simple like a wrench. The suits that you've been developing are really, really different. I mean, first of all, I think they're pretty much like on top of your skin. Right?
Yeah,
it's more like
skin tight.
A leotard than a Michelin Man suit.
Exactly. So we use the concept in that research of mechanical counterpressure. So you apply the pressure. It's the same pressure. We need a third of an atmosphere, which is about 30 kilopascals or 4.3 psi, whatever unit you like. But it's about a third of an atmosphere. Can we do that? So that was our big technological challenge. Can we do that and apply it directly to the skin?
Yeah.
And so far, it's research. That's research and development. It seems that it's technically feasible, which is the great news, still needs a lot more development.
Mm. So that's a science and technology that obviously has applications to Mars missions, and you know, maybe even sooner than that, because as you've mentioned, we have the International Space Station up and in orbit right now. But what about unmanned missions that NASA has been undertaking in recent years? I mean, there have been quite a few successes there. What are some of your favorites?
Oh, well, right now I have to talk about New Horizons. I hope everyone is going to tune in. On next Tuesday, July 14th, we are at Pluto. We'll be as close to Pluto as we've ever been. It's phenomenal. So there's already some great images coming out. But New Horizons mission to Pluto, it's our last planet in the solar system, really.
Technically not a planet anymore, though, right?
You know, so, you know, let's say we have data now from all the, you know, 9 planets in the solar system. The images, the celebration, you know, it's taken almost a decade to get there. So this is just coming to a culmination, and we get to celebrate that next Tuesday.
Yeah. But if I may, as an American, I have to say I was a little disappointed that the Europeans beat us to landing on a comet and NASA didn't pull it off first.
Okay, so that's a good point. But let's see. So NASA is leading, and we want to be the international leaders, of course, leading International Space Station future. But it's also, right, we partner, and we're really proud, and we celebrate. We have such close ties with our European colleagues, friends. And so don't we want them to be first on a few things, too? You know, so again, I don't think we need to lead everything. I love to see first happening in kind of all the spacefaring nations, and there's more to come. That's the exciting thing for the
more
future.
More nations.
More nations, absolutely.
Okay. Well, so you mentioned partnerships. And that is one thing about how NASA is changing that I did want to talk with you about, because NASA is, for example, partnering with private space exploration companies, SpaceX being one of them, in order to do what NASA used to always do in-house.
That's exactly what we need to do.
But is it the right thing to do? I mean, because I feel like a lot of space purists don't want private companies. What they worry about is the privatization of space.
Yeah, this is a public-private partnership. Much better that private companies do this, and NASA can get on with our business, too, of exploration. You know, we have constrained budgets and limits and things like that. So it really makes sense. These public-private partnerships are absolutely critical. That is the future of exploration.
Hmm. So, Dr. Newman, here we are. It's July. And, of course, July is always a big month in terms of NASA anniversaries. And I was just calculating that it was 46 years ago on July 20th that Apollo 11 and Neil Armstrong put the first human footsteps on the moon. And I think back to the speed with which that happened, right, from President Kennedy's announcement to a mere 9 years later in 1969, the moon landing happened. Do you ever wish for that same kind of speed, and do you think that we have that same sort of national desire to push to Mars?
I love the question. Of course, I'm an eternal optimist, so I think we do have the will of the people for exploration, and the next push will be to Mars. So I think we need to really kind of capitalize on that. We have to do it a different era, different time. So we do it in different ways, different partnerships, different models, much more reduced budgets. But the inspiration and the will to explore and just the human desire, I think it's there, and we need to tap into it. So everyone should be dreaming, I think, just like I was a young person when I looked up at, you know, Apollo and saw that landing, the moon. And so, you know, who are going to be the first people on Mars? And I sure hope it's a great American boy or girl that's listening to this interview today.
Would you go if you could?
I would go. I would definitely go to Mars. And you know the good thing about that? I might fit into the older, elderly category of astronauts going to Mars, right? Because take someone that's older, you don't have to worry as much about the radiation problems and things like that.
Yeah. Well, Dr. Dava Newman is Deputy Administrator for NASA. Thank you so much for joining us today. Oh, it was really great to talk to you.
Such a pleasure. Such a pleasure. Love you guys. Great to be here with you.
Stay with us. Coming up, the bluegrass rock band formerly known as Poor Ol' Shine returns to our studios as Parsons Field. I'm Anthony Brooks.
I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston.